Welcome to the Rich Tong Family Podcast. Well, thank you very much for taking time in your day to talk to me. I have to admit, it's strange to do this again after nearly a year in COVID. So I'm starting again because Paul reminded me that I hadn't done this in a long time and he was wondering what I had to say. So unfortunately, I lost all of my GarageBand files. I don't really remember how I said it, and so you'll see a lot of experimentation here. This, for instance, is supposed to be totally flat and has no amplification, equalization, and so forth, so we'll see how this sounds. Now, the format of this is the same as last time. Well, that was the natural voice. I guess I'm going to try it now with the compressed voice and see whether that sounds better. As I mentioned before, the basic format of this is I just read the Tong Family blog. It's supposed to be the inside of my brain, and I guess that's pretty accurate. I try to bookmark everything that I've done, and gives a good sense of what's important and what's interesting to me, and really covers the whole gamut. So let's talk about the six pieces that are in this week, and hopefully every week I'll just keep doing this. Okay, I'm kind of a moron, but I just realized that all this compression stuff and so forth is provided post, so I can just record this and then screw around with it in GarageBand. But give me some feedback on what you like. You can always send me a note at rich@tongfamily.com, or you can tweet me at @richtong. Either way works. But let's cover the six items, and then I've got to get on to some leadership conference thing and listen to Tesla's earnings announcement and all that other cool stuff. So, what do we got here? Well, let's talk a little bit about moving from Windows to the Mac. I've got a lot of friends who are doing this right now. John is doing it, Dave's doing it, and there are a lot of great questions. The first really great question is, how do I run in that incognito mode? I mean, it's pretty confusing that there are so many different names for it. But basically, incognito mode means there's no trackers and so forth. Now, with Chrome on Windows, you actually have to edit a shortcut and add a dash cognito flag and so forth, and that's pretty inconvenient. I'm not sure why Chrome makes it so hard. Maybe that's something to do with the fact that advertising is a key revenue source for Google. But with Apple, it's pretty simple. You just open up Safari, which is the native browser, and it works really fast on Mac, and just choose Preferences, General, Safari, and then you're going to see a dialog box, and you can choose Opens With, and then just select down to a new private window. A private window is what Safari calls incognito mode. Then next time when you open up Safari, it'll always open up private. The second question I got is, what happened to all those desktop shortcuts? Now, every Windows user, every Windows desktop I've seen is just littered with these things. My own gaming machine has got a zillion of them that I never use. And you can create those, but could I just suggest something a little bit different, which is to use that little dock. That's the thing down on the bottom. Now, most people don't realize that's completely configurable. So, for instance, if you want to get rid of some icons that you don't use, just click on that icon and drag it all the way up and it disappears from the dock. You can also right-click on it and choose Remove if you want, but the drag is kind of fun. Then when you have applications you actually want to use a lot, there's an easy way to do it. Just go to Finder, open up Applications, and you'll see all the applications, and just drag it down and drop it onto the desktop, or rather not the desktop, to the dock. Sorry about that. And then if you want to move it around, you just press and click, and you can move it around any way that you like. Now, if you absolutely have to have a shortcut, here's how you do it. Go to that same Applications folder, and then right-click on it, and then choose Make Alias. An alias is what Apple calls a shortcut. And then once you make the alias, you can drag that right onto the desktop, and you can litter your desktop to your heart's content. Now, the second thing that I want to talk about is this thing about keyboards. Since the pandemic, I've been a little bit of a nerd about it. I think I've probably bought six different keyboards so far. And, you know, first I have always had the WASD Code V2, which is a really nice keyboard, super expensive. But I really wanted a wireless one that was also mechanical. Now, the one I've been using quite a bit is it's called a Keychron K2 V2, which is a great name. It's got a pretty good price at $79. And I just want to talk a little bit about it. It's probably the best wireless keyboard that I've found so far that's also mechanical. And here are some notes. The first is, you know, I'm a big fan of the Cherry MX Blues, which are these sort of clicky keys. The Keychron uses the so-called Gateron Blues. They're sort of the work-alikes. And they just don't have that same bump that a Cherry MX Blue has. So I'm still looking for a wireless keyboard that uses Cherry MX Blue, but haven't found it. But one good thing about this thing is that its wireless is pretty great. It seems to work really reliably with Big Sur, macOS, version Big Sur, that is. Although I can't say the same about Corsair's Dark Core RGB wireless, which just seems to keep disconnecting and reconnecting. The main thing is that there's just a huge variety of these backlights. I did get the RGB version, and it's just about impossible to remember the keyboard shortcuts. They even have a Google Drive thing that tells you all of them, but I thought I'd summarize some of them for you. And the big limitation, though, is that you can't really tell when the keyboard's going to run out of power. Now, with the Mac Apple keyboards, they do tell you what the power sources and so forth and how much you got left, but not with these things. It turns out that they do claim they have a 240-hour battery life without any backlighting, so that's sort of useless. And mine basically ran out in a week, I think probably because it wasn't charged completely at the factory. But it turns out there's an undocumented feature. You hold their function key, which is in the lower right, and B, you're going to get a battery code. And what happens is if you've got an RGB version, if it turns red, it means it's low, less than 30%. If the keyboard becomes blue, then it's between 30 and 70%. And then green means it's above 70%, which is pretty darn obscure. I really wish they just integrate with the way the Mac does their keyboarding. Now, if you have a white keyboard, which is a whole lot cheaper at $10, and frankly, I don't really use the RGB stuff that much. I just want to be able to see the keys when I'm typing in the dark. Then it's even more complicated. So what happens is when you hit function B, the whole keyboard turns all white. That's great. That's above 70%. If the first row goes off, that's 30 to 70%. If the first two rows goes off, that means that it's going to die soon. Now, the other thing is that they have a Mac and Windows dip switch, which is on the left, and it's basically invisible. And when you change that, it changes the option command keys, which is one of the crazy things. Now, there are a bunch of other keyboard shortcuts I'll go over quickly. The first is pretty important. You can connect up to three devices with it, and holding the function 1, 2, and 3 respectively connects you to those devices. I actually don't really use that much, but if you get on the wrong footing, then you can be super confused why the thing isn't pairing. So function 1 is your friend. Then if you hold the function key and the Z and the J, I know I have no idea why that is, then it will do a factory reset. Hope you don't need that. And then there is the F5 and F6 keys. Now, these aren't function keys. They're just the regular ones, and that's what turns the backlight on and off. And you just got to know that. And I actually had a mode where I had the thing off. I couldn't figure out how the backlight worked, and I just had hit F5 too many times. Note that this is the same F5 and F6 that works on your MacBook to turn the backlight on and off, so it kind of makes sense. Now, they do have a special magic key on the upper right that's just a light bulb icon. And when you click on it, you get a sea of different patterns. Now, one of them is actually turn yourself off. So I actually did that, and I thought my backlight was broken, but that's not it either. You can also hold the function and light bulb, and then it actually just turns it all off as a shortcut, although I never used that. And then because you can't ever have enough variants, if you hold the function and the right arrow key, in the left arrow key, you dig different variants like rainbows and so forth, and then function left arrow and right arrow are the minor variants. And then function plus and function minus change the lighting effect speed. I gotta say, that's a lot on the Keychron, but I would just summarize by saying sort of decent with the Gateron Pro and pretty cheap, and the wireless works respectively. So get it if you want a wireless keyboard. It's pretty nice. Third item. Well, this is a bit of a depressing one, but Alex got voice fished. Now, I didn't even know what voice fishing was, but basically, he got a call Someone knew his name, phone number, address, social security number, last four digits of the phone number, and they called with the caller ID set to the real bank. Man, talk about hacking. Basically, that's what voice phishing is. They collect all that data and then try to get you to tell them your credit card and other information. So here are the tips for being able to avoid that. Now, I have to say that I personally would have gotten hacked in 10 seconds with this because they knew so much about me. But here's the proper process. The first step is that if a bank calls you or someone important, you can't trust them. There's this thing called deep faking, so it can sound like someone else's voice. You just can't trust anyone that calls you anymore. So the proper procedure is say, that's great, I'm going to call you right back. And look on the website, find the 800 number, which hopefully means their website isn't hacked, and call them back, and then you know you're okay. Remember that the caller ID is completely hackable because of this voice over IP stuff. The second thing is that if you're the least bit suspicious, call the bank right away and you can find out. But remember, banks and so forth will never ask for your confidential information. So if they do, just hang up and block the call. Now, in this case, there's this question about the account. Now, you can't have an account frozen. It actually doesn't close the account. It just freezes it for suspicious behavior, and that's a great idea. And while you're at it, you might want to freeze all of your credit card accounts. Now, this is a huge pain in the butt. Sorry for my French there. But the fact is that Equifax, TransUnion, Experian, they're all going to try to get you to pay for this service, and they legally can't. So they call something else, but basically look for the free service that's called freeze or lock. The second thing is there's a great site called Have I Been Pwned? And this lets you type in your email address and you can find out how many hacks that have been happened on your account. I did that for my account, it was something like 22. So you just know they know everything about you. Lastly, almost every bank now offers credit monitoring. I would just turn that off because the most likely thing is they'll open an account in your name and then start charging like crazy, and this gives you some notification. And I guess the last thing is it's really helpful to have at least two bank accounts because in this case we got hacked, but at least he had another bank account at a different bank. So try to have at least two. And hopefully you don't have to be like some of my other friends where they had to change their social security number. That's really happened. So in all cases, use things like 1Password. It's a great way to store passwords. Don't duplicate. And beware of that voice phishing. Now, the second set of stuff has to do with a long-term project I have, which is I've been using WordPress for almost 15 years now. And it's gotten more and more cranky over time. It's great when it works, but I've always got to worry about my hosting site. You have to run a full server. I finally ended up using DigitalOcean and AWS to run my own server. And then the MySQL databases started crashing. It just got to be a huge mess. Thanks to Alex, he turned me on to something called a Jamstack. And this is a very simple idea. Jam stands for JavaScript, APIs, and Markdown. And what this means is that instead of having a full server that's serving your website, it's just a set of static pages. That means the likelihood that that server is going to crash is super low. It's also super fast to do. Now, he used a system called Hugo, and I've been experimenting with it quite a lot. Here's how it works. The first thing you do is you get Hugo. And what this does is it takes Git, and so instead of having some sort of database or repository, it actually stores it all in GitHub. Now, for those of you who are non-developers, this sounds like a huge mess, but believe me, if you're trying to maintain a website with lots of changes, you want a reliable repository like Git. And basically, it merges the two great branches of web development, which is content creation and the website itself, the programming. And with Git underneath it all, it means that you have one place where your entire repo is stored. So, or rather, your entire website is stored. That repo is like gold. The second thing is there's this thing called Forestry. And what this does is it provides a nice user interface on top of Hugo. Because a lot of people don't want to edit raw files with VI or something else. And I've been using it for a while, and I can really recommend it. It's quite a good tool. It's not really as great as WordPress in terms of its user interface. WordPress has a great interface on the web, and they've got a great iOS application that I use a lot for posting, but it's pretty good. And then the last piece is you got to have a place to store all these static files. And the nice thing is that Netlify is super awesome. For a simple website like this, it's completely free. So not only do you not have to worry about hosting, but it's all very free. And if you've got a simple website, it's just not that complicated. Now, actually getting it all to work is pretty complicated, but the benefits are huge. The first is, as I said, version control. You know, you don't have configuration sprayed in Apache inside the WordPress database and configuration files. And in a blog's case, it's actually all stored inside a SQL Server database, which kind of makes it even more complicated. The second is performance. It's just super fast because you're serving pages and you don't have to worry about running out of MySQL space. A lot of times the RAM in the virtual server will run out and the thing crashes. And I've had that happen about once a month. The third thing is security. Now, with the old WordPress system, you basically had three different places where you could get hacked. The first is the browser itself. Then there's the web server software that WordPress runs, then the WordPress plugins, then there's the website itself. A lot of times that's NGINX or Apache, and then there's the database. With a Jamstack, it eliminates all of these. And basically, the JavaScript just calls the APIs directly. So that means you've got a lot less that can go wrong. The next thing is scaling. And because there are no intermediate servers, you don't have to have Kubernetes, you don't have to think about running things. It's just a billions of clients and then static web pages. That means you can distribute them with a simple content distribution network, which is much simpler than running all this stuff. And the last thing is in the developer experience. You know, WordPress is written in PHP, but a Jamstack can be written in whatever you like. And you can mix in Markdown, which is a very simple way to make HTML. You can use CSS, it's just super convenient. So I do want to say that I've had a great experience there. It's a lot to go over in terms of how to use all this stuff, but you can check out the Tong Family blog for how to get it running. The last thing I wanted to cover is watches. Now, I've had an Apple Watch Series 1, which was way too slow and not super functional, and then I got a Series 3 because of the cellular. And I've had it since then, and of course, they're now on Series 6. But this new focus on health has really had me thinking that it might be time to think about, in 2021, getting a new one. So I thought about all of the new health parameters that Apple Health has, and I realized I'm merely missing out. And yes, it may be true that health monitoring is kind of a fad, but let's face it, knowing what's going on is super great. So I just went through the list of things that I don't have in my Series 3, and it's quite a lot. So, for instance, with Series 5 and above, you get staircase descent and ascent. This tells you whether or not you've got some detected problem, like it's just getting more and more difficult for you to walk up and down. One of the things I really like is a UV index. You know, I don't put sunscreen on as much as I should. And in real time with the Series 5, it'll tell you how much sun exposure your watch is getting. Of course, the big feature in Series 4 was this EKG measurement, which you have to do manually. Basically, you touch the crown and it'll measure your EKG and look for arrhythmias and so forth, which is pretty good, and I'd certainly like to do that. I would say that's sort of a Tier 2 thing. Then with Series 6, they added blood oxygen. And in this day of COVID, where O2 is one of the first measures of illness, it's super good to know that you've got a problem there. And that's true only with Series 6. Now, I've been measuring how good my ears are, and I'm glad to say I'm 75% above all my peers in my age group. Certainly nice to move to new age groups because you can sort of be the best in the worst class. But you can measure noise with Series 4 and the SE versions, and that's really nice. And then there's hand washing detection, which I think is a Series 5 feature, and also double support time, which tells you how balanced you are when you're walking. And then a lot of things after that. Now, it seems like I might pick up a new watch, and sometimes they're on sale. But I hear the Series 7 is coming, and the big rumor is that might be adding glucose monitoring, so what your blood sugar is. So I think I may not get one now, but I'm certainly going to get a Series 7 when it comes up. I'm actually mainly waiting for a redesign because it's pretty clunky. But with the always-on display that they have added since Series 3 and just all these health features, I think it might really make some sense. Now, any of you with any health issues and so forth, you should really think about getting this watch. And if you're lucky enough to use Apple One, then you've got Fitness Plus, which I've been using with my Series 3 watch, and it's really a great way to stay in shape. So think about that. Well, that's about all that I have time for, because I've got to move on to my next meeting. But hope you love this. Send feedback, and good luck to you. Stay safe.